Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Although poet and writer Quraysh Ali Lantana has only been a part of the Tulsa community for a few years, the Enid, Oklahoma native by way of Chicago has thrown himself into community engagement and sharing the stories and history of Tulsa's African American population. Today, he's seemingly every place, founding a public radio program, Focus Black Oklahoma, which shares stories relevant to the black community. He's guest curated several visual arts exhibits, including a portion of Philbrook's current exhibit, From the Limitations of Now. He's teaching writing at OSU Tulsa as a teaching artist, and he's a curriculum auditor for Tulsa Public Schools. Prior to coming to Tulsa, Lantana was a faculty member at the writing program at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago and director of the Gwendolyn Brooks Center for Black Literature at Chicago State University, where he was an associate professor of English and creative writing. He's currently a fellow with the Tulsa Artist Fellowship and the author of 9 books of poetry and 4 children's books, the latest published this year, Opal's Greenwood Oasis, a book co-authored with Najah Amatullah Hilton and illustrated by Skip Hill. The book, one of the few children's books to use the Tulsa race massacre as a backdrop, focuses more on what life was like on a normal day in the Greenwood District in 1921, rather than the violence of the night of May 31st and June 1st of that year. Although there's a slight tension apparent in the story, it leaves it to adults to determine how much of those days' tragedy to share with children. Opal's Greenwood Oasis is a new book from Calliope Books here in Tulsa, and Quraysh Ali Lantana is my guest today. Quraysh Ali Lantana, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Rich. It's good to be here.
Your book came out a couple months ago, Opal's Greenwood Oasis, which is a bit of change for you. You usually write poetry, and is this your first children's book?
It's actually my fourth children's book.
Oh, well, I apologize.
Yeah. No, that's okay. But Opal's Greenwood Oasis has been sort of a dream of mine, a labor of love based on, you know, my engaging in 17, 18 years of research on the Greenwood District, the massacre, and thinking very decidedly about not only how this news, this information about the massacre was buried by the city, by the state, but also working with young people and young people having in many ways as much, if not more, of a lack of knowledge of the history of Greenwood as adults. And that was always, as an educator, very unsettling. So I very much wanted to make sure that we included young people in this history and celebrate black excellence over black pain.
Yeah. Well, the book takes a very different approach about the massacre than the other few children's books that looks at the events related to it, because you stress the viewpoint of a child on the day leading up to the violence, not the aftermath of the violence, only very fleetingly at the end. It's more about the sheer normalness of the day until it wasn't.
Right. We wanted, again, to celebrate what Greenwood was. And I think in many of the history books and much of the scholarship, there's more of an emphasis on its destruction. And let's be clear, the destruction was significant. It's one of the most significant acts of racial violence in the history of the country. But not enough, in my opinion, focus on what the district was from 1905 to 1921, that it was one of the most, if not the most, thriving, economically vibrant black community in the nation from 05 to 21. And the kind of lives that could be lived and experienced in a community. You know, it had a working class and, you know, an affluent class as well. But it was safe. Folks knew one another and cared about one another. And there were businesses and shops and churches. And it was a community. We really wanted to focus and highlight the kind of black life that existed in this community before it was destroyed. And very much wanted to make it a girl-forward focus. Because as you know, Rich, there are more children's books with animals as lead characters than there are children of color, right?
It's true.
So
it's changing, but it's certainly true.
It's slowly.
Yeah.
So we very much wanted a girl-forward focus, and we wanted Opal to take us on something that's very universal. Her first solo bike ride, to run an errand for her mom, that children of all ethnicities and sexual orientations and genders and what have you can relate to. We can all relate to our first bike ride without an adult, you know? And Opal taking us through the district and we get to experience through Skip Hill's amazing, vibrant illustrations, her riding this bike through this community where people knew her, where there were shops open and businesses and people on the street saying, "Hi, Opal, you be careful," right? Because it was a caring, in many ways, a caring, tight-knit community because it had to be.
Right, and what I love about this is you show us what Greenwood was like, which, you know, we always refer to it as the Black Wall Street, which I think in today's connotation of Wall Street is not a really great description. It's a Black Main Street.
Yeah.
But it's a Black Main Street where African Americans actually had capital invested in that Main Street, like other Main Streets.
Like other Main Streets, right.
Yes.
And I think, and I was speaking with someone, I did an interview yesterday with the BBC, and the gentleman who interviewed me talked about or asked me, was it really a Black Wall Street? And I said, well, remember that Deep Greenwood was the economic center, and Deep Greenwood, Greenwood and Archer, and about five blocks from Greenwood and Archer to the north, was the business center, was where folks shopped, where folks, you know, went out to jazz clubs, where the banks were located. But you go further north to Pine and west to Boston and east to Lansing, and you have homes. It's residences, right? And I think sometimes people, when they refer to it as Black Wall Street, they forget that people lived there, that maybe six of the 36 blocks were businesses and the rest were homes. And people of varying socioeconomic levels working and living together in community and looking out for one another. And yes, sometimes there was dirt. And yes, sometimes people drank too much at the juke joints. But it's like any other community.
It's just like the rest of the community at 1921, which was a booming young community that was bursting at the seams, and there wasn't enough housing.
Right.
There wasn't enough, there was plenty of jobs, but there was not enough housing, and there was all sorts of issues of growth at that particular time.
I think about Walter White's, a quote from Walter White from the NAACP from, I think, 1920, about the poverty that was there in Tulsa. Because we had such a rush, such a migration of folks, Black and white, that came because of the oil boom. And then, you know, some folks struck it rich. Some folks had a Beverly Hillbillies experience, but most people did not. And so I mean, Walter White writing about the abject poverty of primarily white folks who could not find housing, who could not find work. And, of course, a part of that economic jealousy is what fueled the massacre.
Yeah. Again, the book gives us a little foreshadowing, and in which you know the history of this period, you know tensions were very high leading up to the events of downtown and the events at the courthouse later, which sparked the massacre. And there's just the subtlest foreshadowing of that in your book. Was that purposeful?
Yes. My co-author Naja Amatullah-Hilton and I made a conscious decision to provide about five or six places, we'll call them sort of launching pads, for parents or adults or teachers to engage further in conversation if they so chose about what happened the next day. But we didn't want to go too far. We wanted to provide educators and adults the opportunity to say, to take somebody by the hand and say, this is what I want you to know. Here's how I can guide you through this conversation about what happened the next day. And so, yeah, that was very intentional. Also thinking about it, again, as an educator, about how much can a kindergarten through fifth grader, you know, how much can they really absorb, and how much of the destruction and the death do we want them to have to grapple with in a book like this? Versus, here's Opal in this having this wonderful day, and here's this amazing community, and there's the tension, yes, but we provide the opportunity for adults, teachers, educators, what have you, to take a child by the hand and say, this is what I want you to know. I'm going to walk you through this. And so that was very, very intentional.
And of course, 1920s, it was a time when many communities, it was a freer time for children.
True. True.
And so by today's standard, it seems perfectly sensible, those little moments of tension that you put into it, because that's life in the 21st century.
It's life in the 21st century, right.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the illustrations by Skip Hill, which you've collaborated on a couple of projects now. Amazing illustrations, the collage technique he brings to his art. How closely did the two of you collaborate with Skip in coming up with the thematic design of the book?
Well, first and foremost, Naja and I wanted to make sure that we very much showcased the vibrancy of the neighborhood. And so all of the names of the people and the businesses were real. Only Opal's family are fictionalized. Every other name mentioned in the book, from Mr. Mann to Reverend Netherland and others, are all people who lived in the district at the time. And so we wanted to make sure that we showcased the community and really brought the community to readers. And then working with Skip, who is just amazing and very much a disciple of Romare Bearden in terms of the collage and drawing technique, Skip dug in deep. He conducted research at McFarland, at the Historical Society, and other places and online, and found either photos from Greenwood or photos of Black life from the period, from around the country, to include in the illustrations. And then he also, and I think this is a really amazing thing, I think it helps makes the book really pop, is that he studied what were the trendy colors of the day. We tend to think of history in black and white,
because the photography is black and white.
Right. So he dug through what were the trendy colors of the day, and then used those colors as sort of the beds, the foundations for the illustrations. And it just makes it makes all the work just really sing to me. So he really leaned in. He walked around the district. He talked to folks. He actually, when we started the project, was still a resident of Oklahoma City, of the Oklahoma City area. And now he's a Tulsa resident. But he actually walked the district. He spoke with folks. And I believe that the illustrations, you know, showcase that leaning in, because they're really masterful.
You know, it's so hard to get a sense of what Greenwood was like, you know, from a walk around today.
Right.
You only get these sort of glimpses of what the district was like. So a lot of it has to be imagination or using archival materials to get a sense of what the district was like in the early 20s or even after it was rebuilt in the 30s and 40s.
Right.
Because that interstate has just torn a huge hole in that district.
The Model Cities Project. Thank you, LBJ, for destroying our community.
Yeah. Well, this book has been out, Opal's Greenwood Oasis, co-written by my guest today, Koresh Ali Lansana, who is a poet, Tulsa Artist Fellow, and adjunct professor at OSU Tulsa, along with illustrations by Skip Hill. The book's been out a couple of months, and it's been selling very well, but I know this summer, especially with the centennial commemoration, there'll be some serious summer programs involved with this book. What's going to be happening with
it? Well, that's right. So, first of all, we're releasing a paperback version of the book on May 5th, so that'll be a little more affordable. And then we are working with Gaining Ground on a project. We're working with the Greenwood Cultural Center in developing a curriculum that's connected to, based on Opal. We'll be working with students, young people at various schools sort of with the book, working with reading partners as well, working with BEST from GKFF as well. We're working on a project now that may actually come to fruition, that we'll be able to provide a copy of Opal to every kindergarten through fifth grader in the city of Tulsa.
Working on that. That's great.
And then we'll be busy. Skip and I and Naja will be around making school visits and engaged in various summer projects throughout. We're also working with Impact Tulsa as well to get this book in the hands of as many young people as possible. So we're excited about the summer. It's going to be the summer of Opal. And excited to work with young people and get this book in their hands.
Of course, that's just one of many things that will be happening around the centennial. As we approach the centennial, I have to ask you, what are your feelings about how the community is or isn't bearing witness to the events of 100 years ago?
That's a great question, Rich. First of all, I believe very strongly that the community in many ways is conflicted, that we understand it's an observation, right? It's not a celebration, although there will be celebratory.
I find it, you know, inappropriate.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, as a white person in this community, I think of it as a day of remembrance and atonement.
Right. I agree. There will be plenty of there, but there will be some celebrations. There will be concerts and things of that nature. But I believe also that many members of the community are conflicted about monetizing trauma, right? Just put it simply, monetizing trauma. And how much, if any, of that monetizing of trauma, any of that money is actually going to stay in the district or be earmarked for economic development in the district. So I believe that, you know, and one of the things that I think about often, what happens on June 2nd? You know, where do we go after June 2nd? We know that the commission, Tulsa Race Massacre Centennial Commission, you know, as a sunset in June, they're done. Greenwood Rising Museum will open. And what happens next? You know, what is the future of Greenwood? And how do we, after the cameras are turned off and the thousands of tourists we expect to be here leave, where are we? Is the district any better? Are we going to have any more? Are we going to make a commitment to any more black entrepreneurs or entrepreneurs of color in the district? What will there be set-asides from the tourism dollars that are expected for black economic development? So I think I have many concerns. I have many concerns.
It's one thing to bear witness, but it's another entirely to address the impact that is still very much evident today.
Yeah.
Is that where the concern lays?
That's where my concern lives. Yeah. And I think I'm speaking for many other folks as well when I say that. I do believe that, again, we're having this Hollywood moment, you know? And then when the cameras are turned off and gone, what happens, and how do we come together as a community to do the work of furthering what Greenwood can be and what it should be, what North Tulsa should be? That is going to take a lot of work. It's going to take many parties who don't necessarily agree with one another coming together and deciding a way forward.
And it's just that's one part of the equation for the city as a whole. It's a whole raft of neighborhoods that have been forgotten,
right,
that need to be addressed. And it seems like in our history, there's a lot of announcements, but things happen by fits and starts, and things sort of fizzle out an awful lot.
You know, I've been in Tulsa 2.5 years, Rich. You know, it feels like it's been a much longer time, but I would agree with you from based on my 2.5 years here, that there are necessary commitments to forgotten parts of this city. The Eugene Fields area, you know, 61st and Peoria, North Tulsa,
East Tulsa,
East Tulsa,
West Tulsa,
West Tulsa, yeah, that are just sort of, it's like they don't exist. It's like they're invisible in some ways.
My guest today is Koresh Ali Lansana, a poet, a Tulsa artist fellow, adjunct professor at OSU Tulsa, co-author of Opal's Greenwood Oasis, a children's book, which is illustrated by Skip Hill. He's also participating in Tri-City Collective's Philbrook exhibition, From the Limitations of Now. And as a part of that collaboration, you and your colleagues have been participating in this exhibition with a room in the library. And I sort of refer to that library as a changing time capsule that looks at the limitations of the past, if I can paraphrase
sure.
Ralph Ellison. Tell us a little bit about the idea of that room. You have these blow-ups of white-owned newspapers, black-owned newspapers. At the time I visited, it was on the day of statehood, mm-hmm. and the very different reactions to this announcement and of already promises broken
right.
on November of 1907. Tell us a little bit about this room and what you're going to do during the course of the exhibition.
Well, first of all, it's been an honor to work with Philbrook and their team to help curate this exhibition. I first met with Scott Stullen 2 years ago and started cooking up this idea with him and his team. And so I'm very, very pleased that it's come to fruition. I'm very honored to have worked with Scott and Sarah O'Keefe and Tracy Truels and others on their team to make this happen. You know, there's never been more black art in that that museum, in the history of that museum. And so I'm very honored about that. The library itself is it's an idea of the Tri-City Collective to create this space where those newspapers will change and they will move every couple months as we move closer to the massacre. And so we wanted to see what was happening at the time, what the newspapers, both locally and nationally, black-owned and white-owned, as you mentioned, were writing and reporting and what was important to them at the time, moving towards, you know, what I call the national climate and the local climate, right? And as a journalist, I pay a great deal of attention to media, as do you. So I had a particular interest in what the nation thought about this thing, this idea called Tulsa, this idea called statehood, and then moving closer and closer to the massacre in terms of showcasing how, in particular, how white newspapers wrote about black life, about black people, about the Tribune, as you know, fanned the flames that became the massacre. But paying attention to what led up to, what are the antecedents that lead us to this moment?
Yeah, this was not the first racial piece of violence after World War I.
No.
It was almost in many ways the culmination.
In many ways, yeah. It was certainly the most violent from, you start from Red Summer, you know, on, you know, 1918, 1919 to 1921. And then really, yeah, it was certainly the most violent at the time. And so we wanted to choose these newspapers that reflect this, that Tulsa, what happened in Tulsa was a part of a national discourse or lack thereof, right?
Yeah.
About race and class. You know, one of the stories that I've held on to for a while is from Richard Wright. And Richard Wright, the great, you know, essayist and novelist, wrote a story about how Langston Hughes, the great poet, and Zora Neale Hurston, novelist, essayist, were being celebrated in a penthouse in Manhattan on the top floor. And on the ground floor of that very same penthouse, while this party was happening, there was a race and labor pogrom, right on the ground floor. And, you know, neither Langston at the time nor Zora were writing anything at all about what black life was at the time, which is why Richard Wright had such a disdain for the Harlem Renaissance, right? Langston came around later on in his life and spoke to those things. But at the time he was being celebrated, he wasn't touching what was happening on the ground, literally on the ground, right? In the ground floor of the building where he was being celebrated as a great Negro writer, great Negro poet, which he was. So I think about that in the context of what happened here, right? That Chicago, where I lived for decades, what was happening in Pittsburgh, what happened in Philly, what happened in New York, Detroit. All of these pogroms, all of these were about race and work, were about unionizing black folks, about soldiers returning home and seeing black folks now as their neighbors or across the assembly line from them. And that wasn't the case when they left and went off to Europe. And as you know, Red Summer was initially white veterans targeting black veterans. And then it just moved on to black people, period. And so all of those aspects of what was happening in the country came to a head in Tulsa, Oklahoma, but they were all ingredients, right, of what made the massacre. And so we wanted this library to reflect this change and this mood in the country and in the city and in the state moving closer to the massacre.
And once again, you have artwork by Skip Hill that sort of demonstrates some of these themes. And again, his work is oftentimes more of inclusion and celebration, but it's nice that it's juxtaposed with these headlines and these news articles from the period.
Yeah, we want to, you know, I want to highlight Skip's work wherever I can because he's brilliant and such a great man. But yeah, we wanted to include in the room, we wanted the room to feel like a parlor, a 1920-21 parlor in a home in Greenwood. So you have the phonograph there. You have a set list of music, a playlist, I should say, of music that Nick Alexandroff and Bracken Clark of Tri-City Collective put together, music from the day, and it's. I hope everyone comes out and experiences the entire exhibition. You know, we have the reading room, which I'm sure you went to as well. Mm-hmm. Folks have the opportunity to to copy, photograph, or photocopy, I should say, pieces of literature, books, poems that move them. I love that interactive aspect about the exhibit as well. So I'm very, very happy that we as Tri-City Collective were able to participate in helping make this exhibition possible.
Well, we wish you a lot of success with that project as well as Opal's Greenwood Oasis. You also have another project with the Tulsa Public Schools, the Namesake Project, where you're going to have kids learn about the name of the school and the person behind that name, which sounds really interesting.
Thank you. Yeah, that's an idea I brought with me from Chicago. And that idea was born from an interaction I had with a young person, a student. I served as director of the Gwendolyn Brooks Center for Black Literature and Creative Writing at Chicago State University for a little more than a decade. And, you know, Miss Brooks, I was very honored to be mentored by her, you know, privileged to be mentored by her. But there, down the road, maybe a mile, was Gwendolyn Brooks College Prep High School. And so a young person who had recently graduated from Gwendolyn Brooks Prep came to see me, came to the Gwendolyn Brooks Center, and didn't know who Gwendolyn Brooks was.
Right.
And that's like, this can't happen, right? This is wrong. And so that was where the idea came from that I've been, you know, tinkering with now for, you know, a decade or more. And I'm very happy that we'll be piloting a version of the Namesake Project, a week-long summer sort of run with young people, high school students, working with the OP Project, the Opportunity Project. And then we're laying down the foundation to implement this next year in the high schools. We're going to pilot in the high schools. And then with the goal of then expanding to all of Tulsa Public Schools within 2 years, and then a nationally replicable model. So then being able to headquarter in Tulsa and offer this curriculum and this project to schools across the country. So, yeah, I'm very excited about it. Students will do the research and write anything they want about their school's namesake, you know, positive or negative, but they have to engage in the research and write, you know, a very sound piece of expository writing, place-based writing, and we're excited about it.
It could foster new conversations.
I hope so. I hope so. We will see. I do think that folks engaging in writing, doing the research, and then writing about not only their school's namesake but their community is a part of ownership. And I think the earlier that we can engage young people in finding ownership, taking ownership in where they live, the better chance we have for them to change and make it a better place to live. I'm excited about it. Yeah, very excited to launch it finally.
Gresh, it's a pleasure. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Rich.
Poet and writer Koresh Ali Lansana speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. The Tulsa Artist Fellow and adjunct professor at OSU Tulsa is co-author, along with Najah Amatullah Hilton, of the new book Opal's Greenwood Oasis, a children's book illustrated by Skip Hill and published by the Calliope Group here in Tulsa. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.